For December 4th, 2020, we talk about Demon's Souls, Neo 2, and we ask you to come up with your own video game theme park. Want to give you a warning, our primary recording on this failed. I used the backup recording. It sounds good, but the levels are going to be a little bit more inconsistent than usual. Tried to keep that under wraps, but, you know, sometimes you can't. So just a heads up there. So anyway, welcome to Level 351. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. We are back after taking Thanksgiving weekend off. Thank you. No, weekend week off. Thank you for indulging us on that. It just ended up being easier, but it's nice to nice to be back.
We all successfully gave enough thanks to avoid becoming the sacrifice ourselves and have survived another year.
Yep.
That's how it works, right?
Yeah. And your family, maybe?
That's how 2020 Thanksgiving works.
Right. Yeah, two families enter, one family leaves.
One family gobbles.
Oh, man.
You know, that could be like a happy connotation, right? Instead of like a sad one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah. Look at that.
Yeah. See? Thanksgiving put me in the right mental state. Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So, Dennis, it's been a while since you've been on. I'll throw it to you first. How was Thanksgiving? What you been up to?
It was good. It was small. So Cincinnati locals might recognize the name Salazar's. It's a very nice restaurant in OTR, and they were doing to-go Turkey Day dinners. So that's what we did. And we got two of their, like, it was like a prefix menu where they have, you know, a bunch of sides and courses and everything all together. So we thought we were getting a ton of food. And we just ordered for me and for Jen, cause we're like, we're going to have so much that the kids will just eat off of what we got.
Right.
And it was really good food, but really small portions.
Oh, okay.
And it was like at the beginning of the meal, I was a little disappointed cause like, oh man, I'm going to, you know, pig out on corn pudding and stuffing and green beans, mashed potatoes, all this stuff. And then it was like, you know, just a true sampling. But by the end of the meal, I think we had just the right amount of food, which feels like the most un-American Thanksgiving thing to do. You know, it was probably the best for our waistlines.
Overindulgence, overrated. I've never been the like multiple plates pile it high kind of guy. I think that the good thing about Thanksgiving dinner, like the good thing about any kind of buffet, I've only ever had a buffet style. Never had like the Norman Rockwell, you know, sitting around the table kind of thing, is the variety, not the quantity. So I am fully, I don't care if it's un-American, it's sensible.
I go in every time telling myself that, but myself has other plans.
Right.
You want
to save yourself room for sweets, you know?
I'm on team eat your feelings, so
but for the first time that I can ever remember, I am not living in a Thanksgiving leftover world, and I don't know how to feed our family without weeks of extra turkey.
You were counting on it.
Since Thanksgiving, we've all just been starving because I was counting on that.
Yeah.
And damned if we're gonna go out extra than we have to. So, so it was a good time, very low-key, just us. Although last year we were traveling for Thanksgiving. So we're kind of on this weird streak of just us and the boys, for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I don't know. We might keep it going. We'll see.
Yeah.
Sweet.
I gotcha. Ben, how about you? What you been up to?
I had a good Thanksgiving. I went down to Portland and had Thanksgiving with my friend from college and his fiance. The important part is I got to play board games. Ooh. So that's like nice rejuvenating feature in my life. I got to play Gaia Project and teach two people how to play that, which is my favorite board game. So I was excited about that.
Cool.
It was a good time. And then exciting stuff to talk about in the next section, what I did over the week.
Cool. So, David, how about you?
Honestly, not much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not really anything going on.
That is the best answer.
is the city quieter now nowadays, or is it?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Did you kill a turkey with your bare hands?
I did not.
We talked about this.
you gotta wait. You gotta set up the ambush. You know?
Yeah. Notoriously wily birds, turkeys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have very much going on. I feel a little bit embarrassed. Like, we had a family Thanksgiving, but that is a story that makes me angry. So I don't know that I want to relate it. I told it on a stream. Basically, some of my family members are dicks and not taking this seriously. So still waiting to see if I'm getting sick. So there we are. other than that, though, it's been fine. I've just got my cats in the room here. I had to open the door because Dottie was scratching at it. So we will see if she is able to handle the privilege of being indoors. Not being indoors, of being in my office. Sorry, I'm not locking her out in the snow.
In this world, I've counted my office as indoors and the rest of the house is outdoors. Yes. So I can just feel like I'm getting transition. Have you ever had your cats lick the door versus scratch it?
Not that I've heard, but that would be weird if I heard it.
I swear, like, our doors are hollow, and our cats would, they weren't scratching it because we knew that sound, but it would be like this.
Of the tongue rasping against it. Yeah. Like
the indoor hollow doors would just, they were amplifiers. Huh. So.
No,
it's the weirdest thing.
Dottie learned how to scratch the door from Greta. Like, So I feel charmed that this is how much like event there is in my life at the moment, which is good. The other event, we had a huge snow here, and today was the first day I was able to use my family's snow blower, which fell to me because my parents moved to a condo and they had no more use for their snow blower. So a 45 minute chore got taken down to 10 minutes and I feel fucking guilty about it. It's like, oh, just shovel your own lawn. You shovel your driveway, you dummy. But no, the snow blower is good.
Power tool.
This is true. Yes. A gas powered power tool. Not those electric ones that I have.
All right. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
The means justifies the ends there.
Yeah. I had never used one before and I didn't know that like you've got like a chitty chitty bang bang or like that weird soda car that Willy Wonka uses at that one point in the middle of the movie to go like 10 feet. Just like there are all kinds of like cranks and toggles and stuff like that, and I didn't realize that when it the gyre at the front breaks up the snow and it shoots out this thing at the top, I didn't know how much granularity you had to aim it. I thought, okay, well, I'm just like at the whim of this right here. If I'm getting snow blown,
Didn't crank the chute around.
I didn't crank the chute around. I ended up blowing snow that I had already blown, and a lot of the snow, because I didn't like trim how high or low it would go, it went straight up in the air and blew back in my face. So I was like, nobody that I've ever seen doing this has as much trouble as I am having. And then I paid closer attention. I was like, oh, this thing, like, I have like total control over this. So noted for the future.
I'm sorry, man. That blows.
Oh, God. Did my boo.
Three-time dad coming over the dad here. I was going to say the final form will be once you start snow blowing like your elderly neighbor's houses. You know?
I was about to do it, honestly, but there were some industrious teens about when I was out this morning because the school was canceled today. And they were going around and they were shoveling other people's driveways. I did not want to do for free what the teens were going to do for money. Does that make sense?
You just do it for like 25 cents on the dollar and cut it out from under them while making You gotta teach them how capitalism really works here.
Yep. Yeah. No. Just the more. Guess what, 12-year-old? I not only have a full time job, but I've got parents who gave me this. So fuck you. Here I go eating your lunch. I'm gonna price you out and then jack up the rates.
No. You rent out the snowblower to them, charge them like, 75% of it. They do all the work.
Yeah.
You just make money off of something that was given to you because of your means.
That's capitalism.
It's an American microcosm. Yeah.
I need to alienate them further from the actual snowblower itself. So like there needs to be like arbitrage. What needs to happen is there needs to be a 5-year-old that actually runs it. I have them pay me to have the 5-year-old snowblow all of these driveways. Yeah.
Look, kids, you're just lucky you don't get sued. All right. Now fork it over.
I pay the 5-year-olds in like in Tootsie Rolls, and I get in that, they get to go tell stories about how they push the big snow machine around.
Oh, no, 5-year-olds are smarter than that now. I told you guys about Luke and Milo's kombucha stand, right?
I believe you did. This was a while back, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So this is the 5-year-olds are in on it now.
What was it? They set up the stand. They took the kombucha from you guys and then didn't cut you in on the supplier or what?
Oh, no. I mean, they cut us in. They actually paid Jen Back, who brewed the original batch, but they were selling it for $1 a cup.
Ooh. Okay.
Which I don't know what standard rates are for lemonade stands, but in the Peanuts cartoons, it's like 5 cents. So
yeah, the Peanuts cartoons were also drawn in 1940.
Actually, yeah, we might have been undercharging, I'm realizing. Yeah.
Also, kombucha is a fundamentally different thing than lemonade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you need a liquor license for a kombucha stand?
Not an under the table kombucha stand.
Yeah, I mean, little kids, all you have to do is like run through a lawn and then you're fine. Second, you hear 5-0 coming. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I've got going on. Also, games and such. And why don't we do that? Why don't we get started with the regular kind of show? What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the emboss, and we can get started with
the grind.
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you've been away the longest, so I will throw it to you.
Yeah, settle in, folks. We got a lot to cover. And I'm sure I'll forget something I wanted to talk about, but hey, I'll see you guys again. I feel pretty good about that. There have been a lot of new games introduced in the past couple of weeks. We, on a whim, Luke and Milo were talking about wanting to own a theme park for playing pretend or whatever. And Jen and I started reminiscing about Roller Coaster Tycoon, and they're like, we should do that with them. And so one of the weekends we bought Roller Coaster Tycoon 2. It's whatever the edition on Steam is now.
Yeah.
And just spent the weekend playing this and building roller coasters.
God, those games rule. Those are so fun.
Fan freaking tastic. And I think I had an epiphany about like the way that you enjoy, or I enjoy making roller coasters, is very dependent on the terrain that you start from.
Right.
And so that, it has an editor mode where you just spawn in. It's just a blank grid and you have infinite money and time and space to make whatever roller coaster you want. And so I went into that thing like, oh, this will be the perfect playground. And everything just felt completely uninspired and uninteresting and just... Mm-hmm. There was nothing to it. And you just kind of need that, every park has its little landscape, gimmick or bit that it does. Mm-hmm. One's in a crater, one's on a very small parcel of land, et cetera, et cetera. One's on a lake. And I kind of had the realization of just how dependent your creativity is on those constraints, I guess you could call them, but on that landscape to like give you ideas for like, oh, we should put something on that hill, or this would be a cool place to start a tunnel, and so let's build the entire coaster around that, or what have you. So that was just an interesting little insight from coming back to the game after I don't know how many years.
That's especially true. I mean, even in city builders, right? Like you would think, okay, if my map is nothing but you know, green lands like in SimCity or whatever. I can build whatever I want, but like, no, like a, like the river in the mountains, like it gives you in bounds and out of bounds, right?
Yeah,
it,
what, like, I, it'll... what I want is problems to solve.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
In that case, it's a good time to be alive.
but that's interesting because you guys engaged with it more on like the coaster design. Were you actually like running a park and like trying to like make a budget and building a roller coaster within that budget, or were you using it as like a roller coaster design and testing kind of thing?
So where we wound up going was we'd just go to the beginner parks, which usually have pretty attainable goals. And building roller coasters in those at the same time as just kind of doing all the little thrill rides and stuff. And the kids were down for like the overall park management thing. Like they were excited about the idea of like, this is our park in general. They're like, oh, put a carousel over here and stuff like that. But we definitely spent most of the time on the rides. It did lead to that weird thing, for anyone who's played the game, where you kind of, you get 99% done with the coaster, but you're out of money. Uh-huh. You just have to sit and wait for someone to go through your gates and pay tuition or pay tuition.
Oh my God.
We're going to school on these roller coasters.
It's a college coaster, everybody. Oh man.
Still less exploitative than student loans.
Yeah. And you throw up just about as much.
Yeah.
I love that. Oh my God. I love the idea that it's a $30,000 coaster. You're on it for 4 years.
Sorry. So.
You decide you want to ride a different car halfway through, and then you have to haggle over what pieces of the car transfer.
So my understanding of Roller Coaster Tycoon is that the point of the game is to make roller coasters that, like, launch the cars into space and, you know, crash spectacularly and see how much you can get away with.
Okay, so the last time we played, I tried. And I chose wrong and I wasn't able to do it. And I've forgotten there are only certain coasters that can run in like a launch out and back mode, where you are able to, end it without completing the track. Like certain coasters are meant to be like, you just launch super high vertically and then it rolls back into the station. And I had chosen a coaster and worked on for like, you know, all this time, this elaborate like death ride that was going to crash. Uh-huh. And then there was no way to actually launch the car. And I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I was going to traumatize you guys. Now we got to wait a couple times.
Yeah. You have to do smaller proofs of concept before you, before you take it out into a bigger, more elaborate ride.
Yeah. But then they'll be on to you.
Yeah.
Oh geez. I'm still waiting. I don't know if this is a mod you can put in Planet Coaster, but are you guys aware of the Euthanasia Coaster?
So I was debating whether to bring that up or not.
is it just like what I think it is?
It accomplishes basically what any of this would accomplish, the launchers and whatnot. But it was specifically designed like as an art exhibition, but there's a physics element to it. The idea being it is a roller coaster that has a very high hill at the start, and then it takes you through a series of progressively tightening loop-de-loops, subjecting you to 10 Gs for 60 seconds. Causing you to die from cerebral hypoxia. It's never been made, and obviously it's a very grim idea, but I love the idea of like, okay, I'm going to punch my ticket by buying the ticket to the Euthanasia Coaster.
I feel like we don't need advanced engineering for someone to like die in extreme terror. Like, we can do that much, much easier. We need, like, if we're going to say we're going to do euthanasia, which obviously a lot of questions with that, but like, if we're going to do that, we need engineering to make it not terrifying, not to make it more terrifying.
Okay, we have very different philosophies, my friend.
Yeah, like euthanasia, if you could have like 1,000 spiders give you a hug to death, like that would be a nice happy way to go out.
Yeah, right? Yeah, just like going to sleep. Oh gosh, yeah. I was always a weirdo when it came to playing Roller Coaster Tycoon. I was less, I would like buy the pre made coasters or whatever, and mm-hmm. most of what I did was mess with concessions and see how few bathrooms I could add before it started causing problems.
Yeah. You and Jen both. She was all about the concessions.
Yes.
But yeah, like the problem with custom design coasters in the real game, which again, as we established, is the right place to build them, is the way pause works in Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 is you cannot build while you're in pause. So you need to make the thing in real time.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, which is just it's odd. And again, sometimes you're waiting for money, and so it definitely shows its age in some ways. But the two final thoughts for it is. As you just kind of alluded to, Jen and I have nerded out on the business side way more than we should. And so at any point, we're making roller coasters for the kids, and then we're discussing, how long the advertising campaign should be to make sure we have good wear in. And, should we be charging 10 cents per go for the bathroom stalls? The answer is always yes.
Uh-huh.
And all that
stuff. European style.
Yeah. So initially after we played, Miles, can we play the train game again? Can we play the train game again?
Ooh.
And so finally I was like, it's not the train game. It's Roller Coaster Tycoon. And like, as cute as it was, I was going to leave it. He goes, okay, cool. Can we play Roller Coaster Typhoon? I like that way better.
Okay. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to play this version where you're like trying to create a park during a hurricane.
Yeah.
So also played with it. Well, any other questions on Roller Coaster Tycoon 2?
I want to shout out that the only time I played that game was when I was a kid at Jen's house, and I only tried to murder people with a coaster and then lost interest after I couldn't do that. Couldn't nice. Figure out how to do it.
So the other game I've been playing with the kids, actually I've been playing a ton with the kids, but one of the others is Pokemon. I've talked about that before. We are still at the Dragon Gym. Luke is still working up the courage to go and face the final gym, which he still thinks is the end of the game.
Okay.
And we've latched onto a new distraction, which is he's got a Snom, which is, I think, is one of the new Pokemon for this generation. It's super weak. It's like this little guy. But if you have to be best friends with it, and you need to level it up at night, and that's when it will evolve.
Okay.
And so there's like it's one of the most stringent arcane requirements for evolving a Pokemon in Sword.
Does it communicate this to you? Because like in the past, that would just be something you had to intuit or find in a guide.
Doesn't tell you fuck all. So we had to Google that. And then of course the ability to like know how good of friends you are with your Pokemon is completely arcane. There's one house in one of the cities that has a boy who will say something like, oh, you guys seem like really good friends, or like, oh, you could work on your relationship. And it doesn't give you like what that actually means. It just kind of gives you a vague sense of it.
He's the vibe checker.
Don't judge me, kid.
Yeah. but what that means is twice now, I've thought like, because we go and check this every once in a while as he's playing. I've thought like the thing changed. I'm like, oh, surely that comment, I forget the specific language, but like that comment means we're best friends now. And so I'll be like, all right, Luke, tonight you're going to get to stay up late because night begins at like 8 p.m., which is his bedtime. but you're going to stay up late. We're going to do a special thing. We're going to evolve Snom. I get them all hyped because I was so sure it was right. And then it turns out we weren't enough friendship levels high enough. And there's tier that we need to get to.
How do you raise friendship? Do you like buy him treats, or is it literally just you do battle with him and he could like he grows affinity?
You have to battle with them and they can't die, which is not a good recipe for a 6-year-old playing the game.
Right.
So by friendship, you mean Stockholm syndrome.
Correct. Yes. Fortunately, there is an item that you can give them. I think it's a bell that makes you friends quicker.
Gotcha.
So anyway, I think finally I Googled enough to figure out that we're on the last tier, and like the next time we get a bump in our friendship or whatever should be enough.
Okay.
But I've already screwed the pooch twice on this big exciting moment for Luke.
Oh.
but we will get there.
To stay up past bedtime a couple of times.
Yeah, that was the real win for him. I've also been playing through the Jack games with the boys. So we're on to Jack 3, which is the last in that series.
How did they handle the tonal shift in Jack 2?
I they took it in stride. Like, it was just, I don't think it registered as, or I don't think they know enough to think it's weird that there's a big tonal shift in the games.
Did they notice that all of a sudden you can speak?
Yeah, I think and then again, they just kind of accept it. They're like, oh, cool, that's a thing now. And all the innuendo and stuff goes completely over their heads. So that's fun.
So I have to say, when you said we're playing through the Jack games,
I thought you meant Jackbox.
Yep. And I'm like, playing through them like in order?
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. I'm a Jackbox completionist. You really got to start with one to understand the nuances of the story.
You need to get those outdated Quiplash props.
You can't appreciate Trivia Murder Party 2 until you play Trivia Murder Party 1.
They're just a lot of cues you miss, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm a Trivia Murder Party purist here. TMPP. Yeah, so that's been fun. It just solid platforming, and I've got a lot of nostalgia for it. Let's see. I think that's everything I've been playing with family, and I probably won't get to everything. I bought the Frozen Wilds for Horizon Zero Dawn, but that content starts at level 30, and I'm currently level 22. So I got a ways to go.
Oh, it's okay. Leveled, yeah.
What's that?
I didn't realize there are levels in Horizon Zero Dawn.
Yeah, like, you unlock new skills and abilities, and you get a little extra health. Like, it's RPG-esque.
I thought it was like a Zelda game.
No, not quite. You get better versions of the different weapon types that are your main verbs. But really, they pretty quickly give you every tool in your arsenal. Which I appreciate. And the game has a really tight loop of kind of scouting out a place and setting up a trap. And I think it is fun to play when it doesn't quite work and everything goes to pot. And that's the judge of a good stealth game. But man, can you fall into the trap of like feeling like you need to restart because your heist didn't go perfectly, you know, which fundamentally it's not a stealth game, right? It is primarily about the overt fights, not the stealth fights. Mm-hmm. It's just, you can do a lot of cool creative stuff and setting traps and creating stealth ways in. And so I got to remind myself of that, because otherwise I would never get through the game.
Setting up for that perfect first strike. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Exactly. So yeah, I'm excited to get to Frozen Wilds, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. Still playing Squadrons, and that has been that's been probably 80% of my time.
Yeah,
That game is so freaking good, especially in VR.
It's really good, and it's been on sale a lot over like Black Friday and stuff.
It's $15 now. It's ridiculous. I think through GameStop.
Where is it $15?
Through GameStop. I don't know if you can get it online.
It was $15 at Amazon, Best Buy, stuff like that. $15, $17, something like that. Like it retails originally for like $30. Like, it's very much a budget title, but
yeah, which I mean, for the amount of game you get, because there's a full blown campaign.
Like a 10-hour campaign. Yeah.
But there's something about, I think it's the size of the teams, and then the fact that you're not, you know, it's not a character, it's like you see the person's name.
Mm-hmm.
That I just, it feels more familiar throughout a match than any other multiplayer game I've played. In general, like the battle royales, you're always killed by some rando, you know, who are good at like League of Legends learn the little ticks and quirks of the individual they're playing, but you're still like, oh, that's I don't know League of Legends characters anymore, that's Annie in mid, and I'm playing against that character more than I am playing against a person.
Right.
But what I've found is, like, over the course of a squadrons battle, you're like, oh, this, you know, Ewok 32 or whoever, like, he always peels high after his bombing run, so I can get in line behind him there. Or like, mm-hmm. Oh, so-and-so switched to a Y-wing, I'm going to go pick on him. Or, and it's just like it feels different in terms of, like, I feel more on the court with these other individuals, mm-hmm. and I'm playing against personalities in a way that is completely, like, that's just organic through the play. There's not systems to support that. but in a really cool way. And I haven't gotten that feel from other games. And I don't know if that's just because I'm not good enough at other games to see that, but it is really, really cool to like, I noticed a tendency for that player. I can exploit that or, so-and-so is guarding this area. So I'm going to go somewhere else.
It's necessarily more expressive than a game where like the possibility space is governed by either what a character's stats are or what moves are available to them. Like, you know, the way that somebody flies. What's that?
I just want to clarify. You're not killing actual Ewoks, right? You're not like the AT-AT in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, dude, no, I wish. That would be an instant buy for me.
Oh my god.
So that it is. It's just a really interesting. Like I've enjoyed that aspect of it more than I thought I would.
Mm-hmm. So,
Go ahead.
So most important question, I've been debating whether or not to pick this up, but my most important question here is, can I fly a B-Wing?
Okay, they're adding this.
Yes, they are. It's coming.
They're adding B-Wings and TIE Defenders.
Mm-hmm. Guys, it's a trap. Don't buy that DLC.
I'm going to get it. We've talked about this. The last time we talked about Rogue Squadron, we talked about how we all have like weird affection for the B-Wing.
Mm-hmm. And it's for free. It is completely free.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done several huge content drops. And I think from the beginning, they've kind of had this stated, like, we're not doing paid content for this game. You get everything for free. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot. Yeah. So that's super cool.
Nice.
Yeah. Slay the Spire. I'm in the weird position where I, and maybe only Ben will understand this, I have the highest ascension level with the defect, one of the characters. But he is also the only, or it is also the only thing that I have not beaten the true ending of the game with.
Mm.
So I figure that out. I don't know how that works. Like, there's just something weird when I've beat the game with the other two, I've gone back to like the easiest difficulty and stomped through. And I do it that with the defect and I just turn it into complete crap. So
some sort of joke about the defect not having a heart and not being able to beat a heart. I don't know.
So it's the defect. That's the little kobold guy.
It's the robot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know this, but I don't know how to move us on.
I'm still playing Slay the Spire. I'm still playing a lot of Slay the Spire.
Cool.
Final thing, not technically a video game, but I read Masters of Doom.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is a book that chronicles id Software's rise and kind of the fragmenting of it.
Mm-hmm.
As they kind of handled success or didn't.
I'm looking at you, John Romero.
Yeah. Specifically, yeah. It was really interesting. The book was written in, I think, 2003 or 2004 or something like that, which would have been right in college range for us. It was really interesting to finish the book. I think it tries to be very fair and give the true perspectives of people, but it's very hard not to just see Romero as an asshat. And then going and reading up on what they've done since the book was written and being like, no, Romero was definitely just an asshat.
Yeah. Ion Storm and all that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, just a really interesting breakdown that, has made me think twice about ever wanting to work in the video game industry, but it was a really fun read.
Yep.
It's not the same video game industry. I mean,
no, it's very
much, much worse.
yeah, that's kind of where I was going with anymore. That.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Carmack is, trying to go to space. So,
inside his VR headset.
Oh, yeah. Is he still at Oculus or I don't know.
I believe
he he went from Oculus he's at Facebook and he was at the center of all that litigation.
Gotcha. Yeah.
That was all post book.
Wait, what? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, post. Okay.
Post book. Yeah. After the Masters of Doom was written.
Yeah.
Post book, but not post Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But just for, especially with their early games, reading about how those were created and just the way that those came together with a small team was fascinating. Like really, really cool.
I wish there was more about Doom 2 because that's the one that I like better. But at that point, like everything, like what I would want is like a level by level, like breakdown and justification of why each level is the way that it is, not like a biographical you know, kind of approach. Yeah.
Went, like, Doom fireside chat.
Something like that, yeah. So it just
it's all fire.
I got and read that book when we were doing the bonfire sermon, when we were doing the Watch Out for Fireballs about Doom 2, and like Doom 2 gets like half a chapter and then it moves on. Mm-hmm. But I'm just asking for it to be a different book than it is. So
yeah, it's almost like Doom 2 was right before all the good juicy drama stuff really went down.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is probably why it's a good game.
Yeah, but yeah. It is kind of like all these fireworks went off immediately after Doom 2.
It's immediately is, after they got a shitload of money. Yeah,
yeah. It's funny how money does that to people.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my reading. I also I'm trying to do more reading. So I bought. I think it's just called like Level Up or something like that. It's a very generic name, but it's the most recent book on the video game industry that came out. Okay. This is going to bother me. I got to look up the name here. Mm-hmm. I've also been reading some video games businesses or mm-hmm. business books, which has been cool.
Yeah. Nice. I need
to read. Yeah, there's a ton of crap for you.
Yeah. I need to read more. Whenever I'm reading, I'm happy. When I forget to read for a while, I get bummed out, and then yeah, I just need to make time for it because I know it makes me feel good.
Whenever I'm reading, it's the news and I am not happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
jeez. I think I see your problem. It is it is interesting. It is like relearning the skill, not in terms of like being able to read, but like the first couple of times I'll come back and read a book after I haven't for a while, I'll feel groggy. I'll feel like my eyes are hurting. I'll be like, why am I feeling so weird reading? And then you kind of just get back into it and suddenly you're devouring chapters without feeling weird about it. So
yeah. That's
I think it's just, yeah,
it's a muscle. I'm going to go next because I don't have an awful lot, but what I do have is new. So I got my PlayStation 5.
Hey, nice.
Yeah. I happened to be awake for an alert to come through, and I got it, and it showed up like, not terribly long. It was right around the time of the European launch. So I got that, and I got Demon's Souls, and I also have a copy of Miles Morales kicking around here. I have mm-hmm. two games to talk about with the PlayStation 5. The first of which is Demon's Souls, and the second of which is not Miles Morales, but is Astro's Playroom.
Cool.
Yeah. Wait, is that what it's called? Astro's Playroom?
That sounds right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's the game that comes with the PS5. Which one do you guys want to hear about first?
I want to hear about Wii Sports.
Okay, let's talk Astro's Playroom.
The pack-in that is apparently phenomenal.
Yeah, it's really good. I've been trying to find like a way to tweet this, and I'm sure the point has been made much more cogently elsewhere. Which is to say that like this is the best Nintendo impersonation I've seen a company do.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Not just because it is a 3D platformer that is like super charming and whatnot, but it is also like a demonstration of the capabilities, specifically of the DualSense 5 or whatever it is, the new controller, which is actually mm-hmm. a really good controller. Even if every time the triggers offer resistance, I feel like I'm breaking them. Like I've had a controller's trigger crunch on me before, and that's never been good. And the fact that it is a feature now, still like that doesn't allay my like my instinctual sense that like triggers are supposed to move smoothly.
That is literally the case. Like people spend lots of money modifying triggers to make them pull smoothly.
I mean, I'm thinking specifically on a controller, but like, yeah, but like it's a real fun 3D platform, and it makes me want to. I need to watch for it to go on sale. The Astro's Astro Escape Bot or whatever, the PSVR one that uses the same character. Mm-hmm. Playroom. Anyway, sorry, back to this. It's a real kind of standard 3D platformer. You can run around and bop some stuff. You have the ability to do like a little like jetpack kind of move where your exhaust that comes out of your feet as you're hovering will destroy stuff. But like what's neat and charming about it, like A, is the gimmicky stuff. It is, you know, when you hop into like a monkey ball or whatever, you know, you hop into a sphere and you are flicking the touchpad in order to, you know, move your guy around like a pinball or whatever. You know, again, using every part of the controller, including the microphone to like blow and make wind happen in the world, which is just straight up a feature from the DS that was only used in like two games and then dropped. But like another thing that I found myself pretty susceptible to was the fact that it's like loaded with PlayStation iconography. Like you'll go through individual like levels and then at the end what you'll get is like a fun little 3D model of the original PlayStation or like a PSP Go or something like that that you can like move around and like monkey with and press a button to make it, you know, do different stuff, you know, pop the CD hatch open or whatever. And yeah, like the entire thing just kind of plays a little bit like a commercial for, hey, remember the PlayStation and how neat like the PlayStation has been since it's been out. Here's a game that's kind of about that using this new mascot that we made apparently.
Kind of like a dystopia, like
wherever there are elements of it that could possibly be pretty gross, but like when you're in the moment it feels pretty pretty charming. Good. Like, yeah, it's charming. Like it's not presented in a way that is like burning through any significant amount of my goodwill when I'm like messing around with it, you know?
Hmm. And it's free with the PS5, you say?
Yeah, it's just included because like it literally is like a demonstration, not just of the you know, the touchpad and the microphone and the resistive triggers, but also like I saw somebody tweet this. They said like Astro's Playroom is the Snozzberries Taste Like Snozzberries video game, where you know it's kind of doing the same thing that the Switch did with its HD Rumble, where like you could tell how many like ice cubes were in the glass, quote unquote, in the game by like wiggling it around, like mm-hmm. how highly, you know, just the specific kinds of rumble that it could do in like particular places. It is like the HD rumble or whatever they're calling it is like spookily like detailed and does convey what is going on in a way that is hard to like get across, but please believe me when I say that. Now, who knows if what good purpose that's going to be put to?
To make your fingers tired.
Yeah. But like, there's potential here, possibly.
Should be the tagline for like every Nintendo console. There's potential here.
Oh yeah, but yeah, it's neat. It's neat. It's short. It's, you know, pre-installed on your PS5. I would recommend playing it because I thought that it would be just like a shitty little tech demo, but it's actually a fun, it's a fun platformer that is, you know, that serves the role of a tech demo in a very Nintendo kind of way.
I have to say, when you said like, this is the imitation of, Sony imitating Nintendo, I had to think, you mean because both companies hate their fans?
No, you know. Any other questions about Astro's Playroom?
That sounds good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Demon Souls? Boy, it's Demon Souls. And that is a good thing. Demon Souls is a very profoundly strange game that has an awful lot of like quirky systems and things, world tendency and whatnot. And I was a little bit skeptical that they would reproduce it, but boy, this is Demon Souls. To the point where like I had very recently played Demon Souls on stream, you know, here earlier this year. I had done that, gone through and done like a weekly playthrough of Demon Souls and moved on to Dark Souls, etc. So I kind of feel like my tank is a little bit empty for Demon Souls as it, you know, as a game, because I had played it so recently. However, as a visual showcase, you know, I talked a little bit about Assassin's Creed Valhalla last time when David brought it up, because that's a game that I got to, you know, run, you know, to run on my Xbox Series X. That feels like, you know, a late generation, you know, PlayStation 4, Xbox One game. Not to, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but it was very obviously designed, you know, with those systems in mind. Demon Souls feels like it was designed for every bell and whistle that is possible on the PlayStation 5 specifically. Right now, specifically visually. This game looks phenomenal. There are some like design changes that they made to particular enemies that you can kind of take or leave. You're going to dislike one and you're going to think another one's cool. So that kind of comes out in the wash. But like sitting and looking at this move as smoothly and snappily as it does in 4K on a high definition OLED TV, like a TV that I got specifically to take advantage of these new consoles. Like it's really neat, you guys. Like it looks amazing in a way that feels like it is lending to, you know, a better experience playing this. You know, even like the animation and the smoothness and like the level of detail to it, like the mechanics are pretty much exactly the same. Like they even brought over the AI of the enemies from Demon Souls. Like the wireframe of this is going to be really similar. It feels different though, specifically because of the way that everything moves, and the, you know, the overall like atmospherics of it feel, you know, substantially more elaborate, more dramatic, in a way that brings kind of a new flavor to it. Will that eventually fade away? Probably, because any Souls game is going to, you know, eventually boil down to its wireframe. But like right now in the gee whiz, this looks amazing. Like this is justifying, you know, the new generation as like a showpiece for this new piece of hardware. It's real cool. I don't have an analysis that's much deeper than that, because I've talked Demon Souls to death. In my opinion about Demon Souls itself has not changed. But like I want to go around and like sightsee in these different areas and like mess around with photo mode, because this is very lovingly upscaled, very lovingly kind of like repainted over.
So one question I have is like the same sort of tricks that you play on like bosses to beat them, like is that all port over in this version of it?
So I've not done too many bosses. Any of the bosses that I've killed so far. So like Phalanx, the Tower Knight, the Iron Spider, stuff like that. Yeah. It feels like the strategies are the same, right? Like I just tried my old tricks and they worked. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you talked about it kind of feeling different because of the way everything's running smoother. I'll be very curious if like, does that literally get down to level of like counting frames for backstabs and stuff, or is it just a general kind of general sense?
I don't know. Like if like backstabs and a lot of like even just attacks feel like far more impactful. I don't know if that is like camera tricks and sound effect tricks and even the rumble that are making it feel like it's different. Like the backstab like angle feels wider than it is, and the riposte window feels wider to get those critical hits. That could just be because more is being communicated by the animations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it Demon Souls or Dark Souls that has the basilisks?
Dark Souls.
Okay. I'm going to say that's the model I want to see in like ultra high res.
Same.
They're tiny little eyes.
Yeah. Hidden.
I'll be really interested to see all like the inevitable teardowns of the new models that are going to happen.
It's already happening. Like you can go and find comparisons on YouTube and stuff like that. and any number of people on Twitter grousing about how they changed this or that. Yeah. So PlayStation 5. Neat. Demon Souls. Neat. I'm excited to dig into more. I really want to play some Miles Morales.
Yeah. Is that but one more for Demon Souls, like the rejuvenated fan base and everyone kind of playing at the same time and having the multiplayer aspect again has to change things.
Yeah, it's real neat. The last few times I had played through Demon Souls, it was a real ghost town. Here you're seeing the ghost flit in and about. Like it does feel like it must have. It does feel like it must have in the earliest days of Demon Souls on the PS3.
So you're saying now that it's not Ghost Town, there's more ghosts.
Yes. Yeah.
It went from a figurative ghost town to a literal ghost town.
Yes. Yeah. I really want to get to the old monk boss fight to see who gets summoned in for that, because that'll be fun. And also the old monk boss fight has some of my favorite aesthetics in the series. And I hope that they didn't fuck it up. Nobody spoil it for me if they fucked it up. Yeah. So I've not done too much with summoning, but yeah, the you can see the presence of other people, and it does feel more like you've got more camaraderie going on, even if it's just bloodstains of people who are doing worse than you. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, how about you?
All right, I got a couple things. I'm going to go in chronological order because that might be fun. After Thanksgiving, the day after, I went to a friend's house and did VR for the first time.
Ooh.
More intensely for the first time. They had a Index set up, and so I got to try that out. The first game I tried out with it was Phasmophobia, but in VR. That game made me sick, but it was fun.
Which game? I'm sorry.
Phasmophobia.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. That's that's when you're what, like free walking around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you use a joystick to like move, like front, back, left, right sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is there's not as like teleporting aspect to it, and which I later found out it eases a lot of the motion sickness that you can get.
Yes.
The other thing is, with Phasmophobia, is like small things like opening doors is pretty cumbersome in VR compared to the game proper. So like you have to click like directly on like the doorknob to be able to like access it. They also have like part of the controls is like how hard you squeeze the controller is how whether or not you're holding onto an item or not. And so so if you accidentally like loosen on the grip a little bit, you'll just drop the item, and you might not know that until like you're halfway down the hallway and you're like, oh shit, I gotta like turn around and figure this out. So that was kind of like it was an interesting experience, but it was kind of like a disappointing entry into the VR situation, because I literally like had to stop playing for like 20 or 30 minutes and like get a glass of water sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's a more realistic portrayal, because as is always true of Ghost Hunters, you are playing completely high. So wandering down the hall, I'm like, oh shit, drop my flashlight.
Anyway, so I'd recommend playing that game regular instead of VR, probably. But after I got over the motion sickness, I played the demo, the hands demo that Index has, where it's just short, like 5-10 minute demo that Valve made, and it's just showing you basically how to use the controller. And so it's in the world of like Portal, where these like orb personalities are coming through like one by one and talking to you about things. But it just teaches you, just do basic things. So like, you play a game of rock, paper, scissors, you give a firm business handshake to one of the robots, that sort of thing. Yeah, that was fun. That was cute. Easy to get adjusted. And then the big thing that I moved on to is I played the first few chapters of Half-Life Alyx. That was a lot of fun. That was
it's really
crazy
cool.
Amount of fun. Yeah.
And did that have the same movement problems that Phasmophobia did?
It did not. It has multiple ways to move, so you can use the joystick if you want to like move the same way as Phasmophobia. But they also have on the other joystick, if you like move it back, it'll appear like these feet, these like colored feet, and that'll move to where you point them. And if you let go of the joystick, you'll teleport to where that is.
Yeah.
And so that's a way you can just quickly like jump through and kind of blink through the levels if you want to. that is makes it a lot easier, essentially.
That's the only way I can play. Like, any kind of, like, you know, move around with a stick is no-go for me.
Yeah.
No, interesting. Because I find teleport more disorienting.
Hmm.
Mm, interesting. The first, like, 30 minutes, I was just in the starting room, just, like, playing around with everything that there's to play with there, which apparently... They like say that on the commentary too, is like a lot of people spend a tremendous amount of time in that area before moving on and then like kind of ramp up from there. Yeah. But it's, you kind of want to like experiment with everything, like everything you can kind of touch and interact with. I was trying to see like the limits of it. So like I grabbed a pitcher and there's like a radio that you can lift the antenna up on. And I was trying to put the pitcher through the antenna and see if it would hold or not. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you can like throw all the shit off the balcony that you start off on, and like some things will be interactable if you do that. Other things won't. Like I chucked it like really far away, and they're pedestrians, but they didn't react to bricks falling right next to them. So slightly saddened by that.
Just regular life in City 17. It's fine.
I guess so. Yeah. What'd you say?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was fantastic. That kind of won me back over, because like after I played Fast and Furious, man, VR, this is all like hot air. I'm not gonna like get this. But then after playing Half-Life Alyx, it's like, yeah, I can see why people would want to get this, especially if, to play this game. Yeah, it seems awesome. We switched off, so I played like a couple chapters and Perk played I think one chapter or two. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like an extremely well designed game.
Did you get to do any combat? Like have you messed around with like the gravity glove or the pistols?
The last chapter we did had the like first combat that you do in the game.
Gotcha.
I don't want to say too much about it, but yeah. It's just really good. And the graphics look good. Like even the computer we're playing on wasn't like the highest end computer, but it still like looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that's really cool about the VR that I didn't know about it ahead of time is like you map out the space that you have for the index. And so, yeah, like once you start to butt up against that, you get that in game, it'll show like the dimensions of the room to like warn you, like, hey, don't go forward anymore, you're about to hit something. Mm-hmm. Conversely, it feels extremely weird if you're in game and your character's right next to a wall, but there's not a wall in real life, and uh-huh. your arm's just going through it. It is the creepiest feeling, like, you're like, no, this doesn't compete.
Yeah.
Just trying to lean on it.
Yeah.
So what are you doing tomorrow?
So that was a tremendous amount of fun. I think there's one other VR game I played after that was called Diner Duo VR, which is just a short game. The cool mechanic about it is it's a multiplayer game. It's a two-player game where one person's in the VR and one person's out of the VR.
Okay.
And it's like the Nintendo like make food orders for people. It's like Overcooked as well. So the difference is the person in the VR is the one who's like making hamburgers specifically is what you start out with. And the other person is just using a controller to like walk around the restaurant and get people's orders. So there's like a communication there where it's like the person walking around with the joystick will be like, okay, this person's ordering a number 3, this person's ordering a number 1. And so you have a menu in front of you, so you see what it looks like. It's like, okay, number 3 is like 2 burgers with cheese and ketchup on top. All right, I'll make that. And you have like a grill that you can cook the meat on. You have all the ingredients in front of you, so it's about assembling it and then doing like an order up, like putting it on a plate and then putting the plate out for the other person to grab.
Do you get to ring
a bell? Can you ding a bell? Oh, yeah.
You can. Not only can you ding a bell, but you have a radio in your workstation too, and there's 3 different cassette tapes, so you can change like the music that you're jamming out to while you're making the burgers. And so it goes over the course of levels, and basically each level adds a new numbered burger order. Uh-huh. And so it kind of increases in complexity, starts to get more fine-tuned. Like you start getting cucumbers, in which case you have a giant cucumber and you have a knife. And so you have to like chop individual pieces off of them, put it on the burger. And so it's a lot of fun, not only to play, but it's a lot of fun to watch.
No, this sounds amazing. Like I want to stream this.
yeah, it's great. You just see somebody, like, watching the person in VR do this is hilarious because it looks like they're doing a Fortnite dance, like, the entire time, uh-huh. you know? Like, and, Yeah, it was a good good nightcap, I guess, or good last game to play for it.
I've never heard of this. It's keep cooking and nobody explodes.
yeah. And then the person, they not only shout out the orders, but they start getting drink orders, so they have to start the non-VR stuff and like giving those to the people in the right time, and they have like happiness meters and stuff, so like you have to try and do things quickly. Like the other mechanic is like the meat can go bad if you cook it and then don't plate it in enough time, so it can get like moldy and stuff, so there's like a time limit.
Ooh.
So there's like there's a fun like puzzle problem there where I was trying to figure out like the optimal workstation. There's like no limit or whatever the number of plates and like sandwiches you can put out. So I think like the optimal, what I was thinking is you do like you put out all the plates that you can, you put out all the bottom buns you can, and then like maybe every other you put top buns on them, because you have like downtime in between when customers come in.
And
so you can kind of like prep your station really
you can
quick.
you can do some neat mise en place.
So that was just like a fun little multiplayer game to get play. But
this sounds like it rules, honestly.
Yeah.
Oh, it's on it's on PSVR too, so you could do like couch co-op with it.
Yep. So
nice.
There you go, Dennis.
I don't know if you could do couch co-op because that's not
how. Yeah. Only one person needs to be in VR though. So
correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The opposite of the ideal VR co-op game.
Any questions about VR stuff?
No.
Come to the dark side.
I mean, here's the deal. I'm going to wait until I get a new computer before I try and go in on Index or anything like that.
Yes. But that seems to make sense to me.
I guess my review of the Index is it's a lot of fun, but I would not get it unless I was okay with spending $1,000 on a toy. If that makes sense. So like
it's a lot.
Yeah. If that's like your bank account, yeah, don't buy an Index. That's not worth it. If like, yeah, if you just, I don't know, if somebody left you $1,000 in a will and it's just like free money, or that's like a tax return or something, maybe if that's,
who knows if this is heresy or whatever, but like, I've played Half-Life Alyx, and that's probably one of the most demanding, at least like from an interface perspective, VR games that's out there. I'm on an Oculus Quest, which is a $300 headset that also works independently of a computer, and all you need to do is get a cable to plug it in, and it acts like an Oculus. What's that?
A cable to plug in and a Facebook account.
Yes, you also need a Facebook account. So that makes it harder to recommend. If you're okay with that, it is, I think, a perfectly satisfactory experience in a way that probably I would consider looking at what the Oculus Quest, or I guess the Oculus Quest 2 is capable of now, as opposed to looking at the Index.
Index plus computer, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Fair. All right, I still have one or two more games to talk about.
Okay.
In my non-IRL, my non-VR life, I guess. I played a tiny game called Pedestrian. It's a puzzle game. I haven't finished it, but it's kind of fun. Presentation's really good on it. Another game that's like basically made in Unity and is very recognizable in that sense, like some of the other games I've played in the past few weeks. But it's a puzzle game that's in a 3D world, but all the puzzles are 2D elements of it. And so it's like you're a person, you're kind of doing platforming puzzles. Kind of one of the interesting mechanics is there's a button you can press and kind of takes a step back, and you can see all the different levels that are kind of around one another and connected. Like, for example, if you walk through like a door on the far left side of the 2D world you're in, you'll come out in one of the other like 2D worlds that is around this 3D world. I don't know if this makes sense. Look up pictures or something. But one of the mechanics is you can move around the different like 2D rooms or puzzle elements to them, and you can draw connections between them, so you can make your own connections. Oh. And that's kind of the part of the puzzle element of it. And so it's like, okay, if I make this left door connected to this right door on this like thing, then I can get through this way and get to the exit.
Okay. So that is by making those connections, you are resolving the different 2D spaces into like a differently configured 3D space that has like different pathways that you could possibly move through.
So I guess let me restart. This game could be entirely 2D if it wanted to be.
Okay.
But the idea is you're just moving through this like 3D world. It's kind of like, you remember in like, what is it, Inside, you know, like how you're moving through this like 3D world, but you're technically playing like a 2D game.
Yeah, it's 2.5D. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like this, except for instead of it being a straight line like Mario type game, it's just a bunch of independent little puzzles that you'll move through a 3D world and it'll just zoom in on where what the puzzle is. You do a puzzle and then you'll like move to the next one. I don't know if I'm describing it well or not. Just look it up. It's called The Pedestrian. That'll be a lot quicker, yeah, I think. Than any explanation I can give. Anyway, small, cute little game. I'm still going to play it. I'm still going to beat it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to move on from there, though. The other bigger game that I've been playing this week for the last, like, 2 or 3 days is I picked up Raft on Steam sale for the Thanksgiving Steam sale.
Oh, shoot. Yeah. Well, yeah, what's that like?
It's a early access still. I picked up because a couple of my friends in Cincinnati had gotten it, and so they showed me their Raft. And it's a lot of fun. It's basically like a cross between Stardew Valley and Subnautica. It's like a much friendlier, happier version of Subnautica. not saying that Subnautica is bad or anything. It's just like a different like tone to that type of thing.
Right.
You start off on a raft. There's a shark swimming around you, which is not fun. You basically fish for resources that are floating by you. You collect them in order to unlock tech and build new things, and extend your raft, and actually do things. After like playing with my friends, I started a friendly world of it instead of like a normal world of it, where you just don't even have to worry about the shark part of it at all.
Okay.
Because like I think in the game proper, from what I've seen, like there's basically a shark that harasses you. I think eventually you might be able to kill it, but I'm sure like another one comes back.
Like in Jaws 4.
Yeah. But it'll like do things like eat your raft too, so you have to like manage that sort of thing, or like attack it or like hit it so it stops doing that.
Hey, I don't want to deal with it. You shouldn't have made the raft out of steaks.
Yeah, well, okay. I want to live my steak dream, and you're not going to stop me, Cole.
I wouldn't try. I'm just free advice. Take it for what it's worth.
Cole, not a shark, confirmed then. But yeah, I wanted to eliminate that entire mechanic, so I just did a peaceful run through, which you don't have to worry about that at all. You can still kill the shark if you want. He won't fight you back though. So you're more focusing on like the crafting and building part of the game. So I like that it had that option, but what you can start doing is you can start unlocking tech like that's like radios, and then you can start finding like kind of like narrative missions to the game.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of the point where I'm at now, but it's like a fun builder of like how you can, you know, you can make your raft into whatever you want it to do. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's a limit to like how like high you could build as like high up as you want pretty much. I tested this by building like a giant tower with a ladder going up on my friend's boat, where it's like I'm trying to think of how to describe it. There's a giant mountain island we went to that was like, I don't know, in real life, maybe a couple thousand feet or whatever. And I built a tower on their raft that went about halfway up of what the mountain was.
Okay.
So you can climb up the ladder and then you can kind of get a good vantage point and see where the mountain is. So will that was like it, a lot of fun.
Will it always float? Or are you just building it straight up so it doesn't capsize, it doesn't fall over?
Yeah, it doesn't mess with that. As I said, it's okay. Like a very fun version of the game. You know, it's not like yeah, it's very, you know, it's allowing you to be creative. It's encouraging you to be like that sort of creative.
Yeah.
There's like simple physics of like, it's a little restrictive on like to build a second floor, you have to have like support posts. And so there's like a mechanic there. So it doesn't give you like complete freedom. It's not like Fallout 4 in the early days of the building system, where it's like you have an entire floating metropolis held up by like a toothpick that on like one corner of it. It's not like that, but so I got a lot of affection for this game. That's kind of like, I'm like, after we get done recording, I'm gonna go back and play that.
The early access aspect to it?
So they just released, I think, what they called like a chapter 2 update last October. So I think that's kind of extended parts of the game. I think with that update they've added like cities that you can go to. I know I've seen this game played like maybe 6 months to a year ago, and I knew at that point they had like islands that you can kind of come across. I don't know at what point they added like these narrative checkpoints. I think I know in the the very early stages of the game, they had like a few different narrative things you could go to, and that was it. So I'm not really sure of like the complete development of that, of like how much more they're going to add and where it's going to expand or anything like that. I just know the thing that they added recently are like really big islands and cities. Yeah. The really big islands have bears on them. You can kill bears. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, after sharks, that's not even going to, move the needle.
One of the charming things is after you kill an animal, you get a head of the animal that you can wear as a hat. And and this does not sound as brutal as it sounds as I'm describing it. Like, a shark head is adorable on a person as they're swimming in the ocean and like jumping out of the water. And like, from your perspective, you see like the teeth in the frame of your first person view, nice. Of like the shark head you're wearing. You can do the same thing with bear too. It's cute. Yeah, I don't know. So this is it's an interesting like base building type game. I don't know. I like it so far. Good to play with friends.
Nice. Yeah, that has popped up on my algorithm here every once in a while, and I'm always intrigued by it. I should probably just pull the trigger.
Yeah, I had seen this again. I'd seen some other people play it like 6 months to a year ago. I wasn't like as interested then because it seemed kind of limited. And I think, to be fair, it was more of like a tech demo when it first started, like very early on in early access. Yeah. It seems to be more of like it has a good like tech curve right now, where it's like you start off with like no autonomy over your raft. It's just floating, and you can try and jump off and grab resources on an island, but your raft just keeps floating, so you gotta like swim back and catch up to it, otherwise you'll lose it.
You have to develop the tech for an anchor then.
The first thing that happens is your raft will eventually hit an island, and then well, now you need to get a sail or something to like redirect where it's going, because you're stuck otherwise.
Can you just be like, nah, this is my island now?
You can, but you can only do so much. There's
only so many resources.
Yeah. But then after that, like as you're saying, like you can get kind of like a temporary. It's just a pail of rocks that you can kick off the boat to hold it down, but you just attach it. It's not like reusable. Yeah. So you work your way up to getting a reusable one. So it has a good upgrade curve to it. So I'm trying to get it, but yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. If you get it, let me know and I will happily join your raft. So yeah.
Cool.
That's all I got.
All right. David, how about you?
So I picked up for the one of the holiday sales, I picked up Nioh 2 for PS4.
Oh, cool.
So, I think their name is
Team Ninja.
No, I was on our Slack, the person that recommended it, Nick, I think.
Okay.
He's a good salesperson for this game. So, and it's been, helping me understand this game because, this is by far the most complicated Souls-like game I've ever played.
It's following very close in the... I mean, did you play Nioh 1?
Yeah.
Okay,
more complicated than Nioh 1.
Wow. So, like, Nioh 1 crossed a little bit of a Rubicon for me by adding the different stances for the different weapons and stuff like that. That was an awful lot to keep track of, along with, like, the different kind of, like, riposte and parry timings that you had. Sure. Yeah, it was just it was too much for my dumb hands because they're made of just lousy meat.
So they still have the stances. They've now added basically the Symphony of the Night style, like when you kill yokai, you have a chance to gain their soul core, which you can then use their special ability.
Okay.
So that's a new mechanic, and that's ends up being, it seems like, one of the main like damage dealing abilities you have. They've also changed up your Guardian Spirit ability.
Okay.
So now you have the ability to turn into a yokai yourself, because your character is basically doing the a la carte thing where you're half yokai.
Okay.
And there's three different types. There's basically a what they call like brute, which is the general like, you know, slow and smashy.
Okay.
Feral, which is a lot of dash attacks and focuses on dodge. And then I forget what they call the other one, but it's basically focuses on the block mechanic.
Okay.
So kind of you know, using similar ideas to their stances.
How frequently can you turn into the yokai? Like, is this something that is you are like weaving in and out of, or is it like a limit break where you're filling up a meter over the course of combat?
Yeah. It's much more the limit break. Gotcha. You're filling up a meter, and it would happen. I have never been able to do it more than once in a boss fight. And I would say, like, over the course of an entire boss fight, that's probably enough to fill your meter.
Okay.
Or, like, if you're on a roll and you're doing a level and, like, not dying or, you know, having to, you know, go back to the bonfire equivalent, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. I'd say about one run through a level is about enough to fill the meter once.
Okay.
So it's quite limited. However, there's also an additional meter that is your Amrita, which is what you use to power your Symphony of the Night abilities.
Yeah, your little magical attacks.
Right, exactly. But it's also all of the enemies now have a... burst ability, which is basically they like kind of flash red and then will deliver a powerful unblockable attack.
Okay.
And you have what's called your yokai burst, which basically if you hit an enemy while they're doing this, you'll you know, effectively do like a parry type of thing.
Okay.
And however, there's the way that actually operates is different for each of the different yokai forms. So for the brute form, you basically just like hit them and you have to, you know, you have to basically have the attack, your attack, make contact with their attack. For the feral, you basically do a dash, and so you have to dash through their attack. And then finally with the other one, you have to block their attack. And so the timing is of, you know, when in the attack window you activate it is slightly different for each of these.
Wow.
And these
That's
also...
That's a lot of muscle memory you have to rely on.
Yeah. And these also use the small segment of your magical gauge.
Okay.
So there's just a ton of mechanics that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
Can I make a suggestion?
This is making Devil May Cry 5 sound like a little Tykes playset.
I feel like on top of this, they should add like an emotional stance. Like, are you angry right now? Or like, calm, like, you know?
Do you have energy for this, or should I come back later? Yeah.
The other thing is the, you know, there's the ability with the key pulse. So one of the big mechanics in this game is when you do a series of attacks, it uses up your stamina, and then you have to do what effectively ends up being kind of like a active reload from Gears of War.
Yeah, I was going to make that comparison. That's right. A mechanic that returns from the first game, except the at least in that one, the visual cue for when to do that is very subtle.
Yeah, and it's still fairly subtle, although I can't tell if I'm just better at it or if they have a window for it.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but yeah, that's you know, very important. So basically, if you do that perfectly, you'll basically instantly regain all of the stamina you But
yeah, all the stamina you expended for the combo.
Exactly. If you don't do it at all, there'll be like a delay before you start regaining stamina. And if you do it not perfectly, you'll still have to wait for it to charge, but the delay will basically start immediately.
Okay.
So the good thing is, like, even making an attempt at doing it makes you much more effective than just not doing it at all.
Okay.
Finally, the other thing they added is all of the bosses have, in the previous game, there was the yokai realm. So certain attacks from the demon enemies would create this kind of pool of dark energy on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're standing in it, your stamina recharges much slower.
Yeah.
Now, all of the bosses basically have the ability to enter and exit a dark realm phase, where basically the entire game goes to that weird kind of Twilight Realm look and gets the stamina penalties.
Okay, so it's unavoidable. It's just like, hey, whether this phase where you're going to have less stamina, specifically to dodge, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Well, and to attack, but yeah.
Well, I mean, but like, you're probably not going to be pressing too many advantages on an attack when they have the ground tilted in their favor that way.
Well, that's the thing, though, is because what causes basically, and if you just do like nothing every so often, I think they'll switch the phase. But generally speaking,
you have to attack them out of it.
The change is when they run out of ki. So basically, you have to drain their stamina if you want to get them to exit this phase quicker.
So you need to stagger them. Okay, wow. Is there a way to turn that around where they have a disadvantage? Like, is there a light field kind of thing you can do? Or does it only work in the enemy's favor?
So what it is every time you use either one of your magical yokai attacks or use the burst counter, it will decrease their maximum stamina, as well as, like, you know, just regularly draining a bunch of stamina.
Okay.
And so some of that decrease to the max goes away when they switch phases. However, it still basically confirms that, like, as long as you're engaging with the systems, you're constantly moving towards being staggered.
Right. Okay.
So kind of the end result, at least for me, is, what everyone says, what everyone kind of characterizes this as, is this is a game where you choose which of the mechanics you're going to engage with. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to really use all of them, but you have to use like a number of them in order to have enough advantage to be able to win.
Okay.
For me, I tend to focus really heavily on those, burst counters and the yokai abilities, and that then becomes a lot about, draining their stamina, and then also tends to become a lot about kind of the elements of, I guess I'd say, if you're looking at a conventional Souls-like game, I find myself having many less of the fights where I'm, staying in their face and like trying to dodge through their attacks and that sort of thing, and having many more fights where I'm trying to bait them into doing the attack I want them to do so that I can try to stagger them.
Okay.
So the other thing I really like is, I don't 100% recall, I think most of the weapon abilities are fairly unchanged, although I'm not certain of that. But one I really want to highlight that I like a lot is they added three new weapons. One is basically the Bone Spear or whatever from Bloodborne. So it's a weapon that can either transform, and I think it's like in high stance, it's a spear, in mid stance, it's a scythe, and in low stance, it's the cleaver.
Okay.
They also added a weapon that's a staff that's actually like two sticks, you know, that can either detach or, you know, be together. And I feel like those are the ones that get all the attention. But the one they added that to me, I think, is actually the coolest is the dual hatchets. And what's interesting with these is if you hold down in any of the stances the strong attack button, you'll charge up and then throw the hatchets at your opponent.
Okay.
And you have unlimited hatchets. It just ignores the fact that, like, how it is you throw the hatchet and then, like, also have it in your hand.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So don't pull on that string, please.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But one, it's interesting just because, like, you have, you know, a ranged weapon in a game that is, you know, basically melee focused.
Yeah.
But even more interesting is initially that it seems like it's going to be either A, like, oh, this is what I'm going to use to cheese enemies, and you definitely can. Or, you know, B, like, okay, this is like some gimmick that, like, I don't know, sometimes I'll use. But what's interesting is once you start unlocking the ability for the active abilities for this weapon, they all revolve around this. So it's things where it's like, oh, you do a Bloodborne style like strafing dodge while throwing the axe at the enemy. Or, you know, flip over them and then throw an axe behind you, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
So it actually builds the entire weapon around this sort of like semi long range, semi melee type of thing.
Hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a really different way to engage with Neo. Like everything. I mean, one thing that was frustrating about Neo was there were bosses, like there's specifically one boss that was primarily a ranged fight, but the only range stuff you have was like a shuriken that did nothing, and then like magic skills that you had no reason to train or discover up to that point.
Yep.
Yeah, so actually having a way to like make you mobile and having the ability to engage at range sounds baller to me.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely the case. I also think you know, Grant, you are right that a lot of the new mechanics can make the game very complicated and busy. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think they make the gameplay much more intelligent. And in some ways, you know, kind of intelligent in a way that Soulsborne games typically aren't.
Can you define intelligent for me?
Yeah, in that there's a lot you can do with, you know, building your different skills to, you know, set up synergies for how you want to play, and you know, really leaning into you know, the certain magical abilities, the yokai abilities, or, you know, the bursts or dodges or whatever you want, in order to give yourself an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, I feel like I'm being more vague than I mean to be, but I guess what I'm saying is, to me, a lot of the boss fights seem to me a lot less of like, oh, I just need to memorize all these combos, and more like I need to come up with a clever way of fitting, I guess it almost seems like gamified cheesing, in that like it's what, you know, I'm going to figure out a way to, based on what this boss's abilities are and what abilities I've developed, to like figure out what is the thing this boss isn't prepared for.
Right. Just like, okay, is there a mechanic that I've been neglecting so far, and do I need to, you know, learn just enough of that and put together just enough of a loadout to bring whatever this thing is weak to bear?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think that to me rings of good game design, that, you know, instead of just sticking with your comfort food pick, it is worth exploring other options that you might not have looked at yet.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, So I agree. And I think with this, I feel like maybe... So this is a game that I think's probably pretty difficult. I've never been good at judging that, you know, in both wise. I don't mean like, oh yeah, I'm so good. I just mean like, I've never really been good at judging like, when do I just suck with versus when is this, you know, a difficult game or you know, those sorts of things.
To put it in perspective, but, like I found Nioh 1 to be exceedingly difficult.
Right. And it sort of feels to me like the game maybe is less hung up on being difficult. So like the most recent boss I fought was basically the first boss I've gotten to that was a human enemy, you know, wasn't a yokai.
Okay.
And so because of that, if you engage it as kind of a hit and run sort of, you know, dueling, you know, kind of skirmishing type of battle, the fight becomes actually very, very easy.
Okay.
And, you know, it's kind of, you know, a data point of one, I guess, doesn't form a line, but it sort of seems like, you know, they basically were okay with like, hey, as long as this makes someone like have a completely different approach to this boss fight than they had to all the previous boss fights, it doesn't matter if it's actually that difficult.
So they didn't like look at that potential, you know, for lack of a better word, cheesy strategy and like smack it down, punish you for attempting it.
Exactly. Yeah. So the other thing I've got to say, there's some story beats I like. Overall, like this still has the Nioh like very tenuous story. Although from some of the character elements, there are some fun things. I'm a big proponent of I really dislike silent protagonists. However, I feel like this game gets around that in an interesting way in that your character is canonically mute.
Okay. So it's not expecting, like, they're like the other characters are not like pretending that you are saying something. They're just
not glossing it over.
Like they
very obviously, like, you can't speak. It's obvious they realize you can't speak.
Right.
And there's and
yet they don't have a workaround of like a chalkboard or something like that.
Well, you know, there is one segment where like one of the samurai that's kind of the anime like blowhard dude like doesn't realize you can't speak and is like blocking your way because it's not safe, so you just have to like emote at him until he gets pissed off. Okay. And like storms off, which is kind of funny. But yeah, so I kind of like that, you know. And I don't know, there's just some funny characterization to that. I feel like maybe I'm reading too much into it, but, you know, your character is kind of, would normally be like an edgelord ninja type of dude, except that, for example, like one of the yokai they added is what's called a scrampus. And it's basically, it's not hostile. It's basically you find it in the world and it's a roly-poly, like it's basically if a cat was an oval. Like it looks like was it Pusheen or whatever?
Yeah, Pusheen, the cartoon gray cat. Yeah
And so you can find them in the world and like pet them and they'll follow you around for a while and you'll get your magic gauge will like constantly refill. And then also if you get into a fight, they inexplicably will like sprout like porcupine spikes and start like trying to run into enemies. It's really weird. But like one of the cutscenes is you're basically like, you become like a samurai vassal under, was it Nobunaga?
Nobunaga.
Nobunaga.
Pronouncing Nobunaga Nobunga is a running joke on the network. So
okay, yeah. Who is my understanding is, like, depending on the game, on like the depiction in pop culture, is either like the ultimate like warlord villain of Japanese history, or just like the ultimate badass hero.
Yeah, but it's like it generally, if something is set in medieval Japan, Nobunaga is going to figure in. Major dude. Yeah.
So, and you go and you know, you work for him, and there's some time where he like comes to meet with you, and like there's one of these cat things like blocking his path, and so like you run over and grab it and, you know, get out of its way. But so you're having this entire this entire cutscene with this character that's, you know, supposed to be, you know, this badass, where, you know, you're trying to look like a hard ass, you know, ninja dude while holding this obese cat. you know, similarly, the guy that's there's a character that's in effect, you know, kind of the stereotypical like sidekick that doesn't know he's a sidekick thing. The whole, you know, oh, with my brains and your brawn, we can totally, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
big sidekick energy. Yeah.
Yeah. Who's also in effect is kind of the character that effectively covers for the fact that you don't speak.
Okay.
And so, you know, good comic relief, although I like the way he's written in that he is this character, but like, he actually isn't worthless.
Yeah.
So like, you know, when he's like, oh yeah, you know, you go, you know, kill all these guys, and then I can sell off, you know, all of the spirit cords and make us a lot of money. Like, he actually is off, like, you know, he's the reason that, like, you end up, you know, working for Nobunaga, you know, that sort
gotcha,
of thing.
Gotcha.
So just, I like that, you know, kind of taking a stock character and making them a little bit more interesting.
It's cool.
Yeah. So that's honestly about it. I think it's a really good game. It's probably the number one game I would say that is, you know, a Soulsborne game that I think stands 100% on its own. Mm-hmm. You know, even compared to Nioh 1, which I think you also could have said that, yeah. I feel like this game is a little, is even less so, I don't know, just made to be a Soulsborne game. It's more made to be its own thing.
Yeah, that is good, because, you know, the original Nioh, it really kind of did feel like it was splitting the difference between being like a Ninja Gaiden and being a Souls-like. And mm-hmm. I kind of wish that it had just kind of owned up to what it actually was, which was kind of a Ninja Gaiden with a Diablo loot system, right? And just kind of like didn't try so hard to be something that it really ultimately ended up not being very interested in being, based on the time that I spent with it, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think my understanding is the weird like split scythe thing and the staff thing are straight up weapons from Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and from what I've seen,
the split staff I know from the Xbox One. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's aesthetic wise, it seems like there's a lot more of kind of the, this isn't exactly right, but I think you'll know what I mean. Kind of the Doom aesthetic with the, you know, demons and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
I kind of associate with Ninja Gaiden. Mm-hmm. So this does to me, I mean, I guess you could argue like, oh, maybe this is just like, why doesn't this studio make anything other than Ninja Gaiden? But at least to me, it more reads like, hey, we're actually making the game we wanted to make.
Nice. We're going a little bit over on time. Is it okay if you have anything else if we address it next time?
Yeah, luckily that's all I got.
Okay, cool. I still feel like a jerk for asking.
Yeah. Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I've got theme parks on the mind, so I wanted to know, if you're going to make a video game themed theme park, what video game would you pick, and what would the star attraction be?
Now, I'm not a psychic, but I think that you this might be coming up in the end boss as well.
You know, I don't want to be coy, but it might.
It might. It may. Ben has requested to go first for tea brewing reasons. So, Ben.
I can't believe you're going to out my tea drinking habit like that, Cole.
For shame. What does David say, Ben?
David says, Resident Evil 4, Star Attraction would be a roller coaster around the park with a giant Salazar statue chasing you at the end.
This gets us into kind of a common problem with a bunch of these that people put in. People would die.
I'm going to request that they make a Salazar statue for each run and have it like fall off a cliff at the end of it.
Cole, were you not listening to our discussion about Roller Coaster Tycoon 2? That is the point.
So in Roller Coaster Tycoon 2, you are designing them for a fake person. In this, you are saying, what if a real thing existed where people would die? Basically, by proposing this, David, you are no better than Jigsaw. So I hope you're happy.
To be fair, I don't know if billionaires see people as people anyway.
Oh, I am sure billionaires do not see people as people.
No, they see us as little meager sacks of, you know, a handful of dollars that they can extract value from and then leave us discarded on the side of the road. Yeah.
So it checks out.
Yes. Charles writes, just give me Gold Saucer from Final Fantasy VII. I agree. Just give me Gold Saucer from Final Fantasy VII. God damn it.
So what is a Gold Saucer?
Gold Saucer is like the amusement park and casino and arcade that you went to probably about like one third of the way through Final Fantasy VII, where you played a bunch of like mini games and like stayed in the Haunted House Hotel and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah, I did not think through how many games have theme parks, and there's a lot of good answers just in there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Just give me the theme park from X.
How is Haunted House Hotels not a thing?
That sounds pretty great to me. I'd love to stay at a haunted house hotel. Mm-hmm. As opposed to like the actual hotels, which are just haunted.
What if Adam Sandler's there?
Oh, is that the plot of that Hubie Halloween in the News movie or what?
I don't know that one. Now that I'm thinking about it again, I'm certain it's the animated one, but I'm certain he's in the haunted house movie.
Huh. Don't know.
If not him, we could punt to Eddie Murphy. That would be slightly better.
Let's see here. David, what does Greg say?
Greg says, a Bioshock-themed water park would be a lot of fun. Could do dives with the bathysphere, water battles where you control a big daddy, and a pool that slowly rises in level as it floods, among other rides.
Control a big daddy. Yeah, no, I could see that. Yeah, I just I'm thinking about the logistics of this, and I'm trying to think of ethical ways that you could control a big daddy.
So, I would like the drinks to be served as those fluid puzzle games or whatever.
Ooh, where it's yes,
it gotta play Pipe Dream.
Yeah, and if you mess it up, then you don't have your beverage.
$7 for a Coke, and you lose it if you're too slow.
My type Pipe Dream. Yeah.
Also, in order to really fit with the Bioshock theme, every single ride you is charged for.
Yep. Even the bathroom.
Bathroom's 10 cents to pop.
At least at the start. let's see here. Dennis, what does John say?
John says, Dark Souls, the theme park. Call it Firelink Shrine. Main attraction would be the jump scares and ambushes by Hollows. Pictures with Solaire. Each ride is themed after a boss. So Gaping Dragon, the ride. It's a small world themed journey through Blighttown. Nonlinear park design with overlapping spokes. Must take family photo with Lord Gwyn on the way back to the exit/entrance. The Solaire mascot would be worth it alone.
Yes.
See, I just want a petting zoo with what's the giant cat and the doggy.
The
giant cat. Are you talking about Alvina, the forest covenant?
From the giant cat that tries to get me to kill people.
Yeah, Alvina. Yeah, you want an Alvina petting zoo. Yeah. Yeah, I just, I mean, I want to walk around an abandoned castle is the thing. Yeah, I can see that being the case. Let's see, Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, Sonic World, different arenas of the park based on different zones or areas of the park, and so many roller coasters that are all about speed. The food is all Sonic 2, the American fast food joint. I don't know how to describe it. So massive cherry limeades for everyone.
Ooh. Yeah, brand synergy. We already have a restaurant called Sonic, so just hire them, dummy.
Yeah, just need some chili dogs.
Yeah, I don't know if Sonic serves chili dogs. They
could get away with a casino in the park, too, if they're trying to make some fat stacks.
Yep. Except to get into it, you have to get past that one weird barrel that you don't know what to do. Like, oh, you got to duck on it or get past it. Yeah. Oh man.
They could have a water park too. That the water's red and there's nice music. Yeah.
Stuart writes Symphony of the Night, where the whole park is Metroidvania. You make it to different parts of the park and do boss events to get power-ups that let you into other parts of the park. There would be hidden upgrades that get you souvenirs and discounts on snacks and stuff. And partway through, no, I'm just kidding. I was making my own joke. Stuart's thing ended. Stuart's responses ended. And I'm moving on to my own joke, which is that when you think you're done, the entire park turns upside down. And people die because they fall on their necks.
euthanasia roller coaster.
Yep.
So Ruki chimed in on the comments for this, just saying how cool it would be if real theme parks did this. And I want to do a plug for Universal Studios, if anyone's gotten a chance to go there, because there's a ton of Easter eggs, secret, hidden stuff in those parks that's really cool. And some of it's just like memorabilia related, like, oh, you can see Jaws.
Yeah.
And other stuff is really cool. Like there are literal cheat codes for one of the roller coasters. And on slow days, you can just ask for a behind the scenes tour and get into like the guts of some of the rides that you don't normally get to see. They have like certain, there's like a talking fountain that, they will occasionally have like some celebrity actually do the voice for. So it's like, oh, you're actually talking with Ellen DeGeneres right now.
Oh, have fun. I have a few things I would like to say to her about the way she treats her employees.
Yeah. That park just has a lot of cool little surprise stuff in it.
Yeah, and like Disney's done stuff too with special things you get with like RFID that triggers specific events. Like all this stuff has kind of been gamified to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see. I read this one. David, what does David say?
David says, Mass Effect. Main attraction would be a Space Mountain style roller coaster where you are the Normandy flying through the middle of a battle with the Reapers. There should also be a Mako-themed coaster where no one has any fun. No. That was my joke. I'm sorry. It should also be a Mako-themed coaster where you spend more time... Okay, he made the same joke. Going up the hills than going down them.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like Mass Effect is just way too horny to be a family-friendly theme park.
No, I need to be able to walk around the Citadel, cruising mm-hmm. for some alien encounters, close encounters of the kind.
69th kind.
Ooh. I almost said that, but it was a little bit too crass. Good on you, Dennis, for being too
lower. Yeah.
What we do.
Yeah.
I'll be the one to say what we're all thinking. That's fine.
It'd be real cool to walk around the Citadel. I would like that. Man, I've had a hankering to play Mass Effect recently. It's been a while.
Are they? I thought I heard they're going back to the well.
They announced that there's a new Mass Effect coming out.
There somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they've announced like the remaster or remake kind of thing yet. That's been like an open secret for a while yet. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Ben, what does Ruki say?
Ruki says, using acceleration gel, the bouncing gel, and some careful portal placement, Portal Land, and Portal Twirled Two World could have the absolute best slash worst roller coasters in the world. While you wait in line for a ride, you can hear Cave Johnson talk about all the horrific stuff they did making it. Mm-hmm. You can also carry a portable potatoes with you to feed you lies about everything around you. The Tester Twister is perfectly safe.
I love the idea that all of the concessions are just raw potatoes.
Yeah.
The Tester Twister is perfectly safe. Yeah. Like a portal themed, like strictly just a portal themed park that was all futuristic. And, you know, you have the different personality cores, you know, doing gags at you would be very fun, I think.
Yeah. I feel like that could be one that could do the, I don't know, at some point people were pitching, what was Microsoft's augmented reality goggles, like theme parks built around that. I feel like maybe you could make a pretty sweet portal park that way.
Yeah. Yeah. The last one here, Jeffrey writes, is Silent Hill 3 too on the nose? Seriously, though, how cool would a haunted theme park be? Very cool. I'm
kind of surprised. How are there no horror theme parks? Like,
they're called haunted houses.
Well, no. Haunted house is a single, like, highly lit
point to point. Yeah.
I feel like Bloodborne could have some sweet stuff, like any of these.
Yeah. I'll do my answer, and it's not just because I am desperately waiting for the Myst VR game to come out December 10th. That was almost my story, but something more pressing came up. Good.
How is Myst spelled? Is it MYST like the old game, or is it
MYST? It is a virtual reality version of Myst. Which that's where I want to retire. No, so I would like to have a Myst where you're on an island. It is literally just a real life version of Myst. There are no other people. It would be expensive because only one person can use it at a time. But you go around and you solve puzzles and you are far away from other folks. That sounds good to me. Yeah. Myst theme park, puzzle themed. Yeah.
Didn't you just describe Myst VR? Like, I feel like Myst VR fits all of those.
So here's the thing. Even though I'm in Myst VR, probably within, let's say, 100 to 500 feet of me, there are other people. There are neighbors and such. What I need is to be on an island where nobody is, except for people who are trapped in books that I could look at, but then I don't. And they effectively don't exist to me.
Gosh,
how are you going to get food?
You know what? We're going to solve some problems when we get there.
that'll be the boss puzzle.
Yes.
Sustenance.
Right. No.
Cole is throwing shade at everyone for how many people that their ride would kill, but his would be everyone else has to be gone. So.
Yep.
Gosh.
So yes, Myst for me. David, how about you?
So I feel like what I want would be probably Bloodborne, but I'm not really sure like what you do with that. Mm-hmm. I think one that could actually maybe be a fairly decent theme park would be Destiny. Like just completely. Sure. Lean into the fact that, you know, this is a much more interesting experience than it is an interesting game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, let's this exist entirely as an aesthetic.
Right. Right. Exactly. Like, I'm wanting, like, you know, do the, like, you know, thing they're doing with, was it Star Wars World or whatever?
Yeah.
With just,
yeah.
You know, most badass merch we can sell, and then, you know, what are like a lot of 4D like rides about being a badass, whatever they're even called, Guardians.
And here's the, they've already got the practice of like ripping out old rides and putting in new stuff on top of it, like Destiny's great at that.
Yeah. Nice. Let's see here, Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I want an Among Us theme park.
Oh, geez. God. Okay.
Yeah. Every room can have a ride themed after it. So obviously the cafeteria is laid up. That's just the big food court and everything. You can have dueling coasters for upper engine and lower engine and just all kinds of stuff like that. So, just pick your room, theme a ride, and we can all tell each other. Oh yeah. At any point you can vent someone out or eject someone out of the park.
See, I thought you were going to go with just make a like giant real world, Among Us game. Like that would actually probably be pretty possible.
Yeah,
this too would be cool.
Hmm?
So also just on like one-off ideas, like just a giant, like obstacle course jungle gym as a Tomb Raider land.
Yeah.
There was a Tomb Raider ride at King's Island for a hot minute.
Oh yeah, themed after the movie, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was one of those just like because
it was Paramount, yeah.
Gyro,
like chicken on a spit type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Except it was very like orchestrated. Like it felt like a Universal Pictures ride.
Nice,
but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
Also, the other thing I want to be a product is like actual trophy hunting, like some ethical concerns to that. So I just want someone to start a business where they'll buy some of those like creepy like dog robots and let me the have Boston, like,
yeah, the Boston yeah. Mechanics or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. you want Westworld.
I want the Monster Hunter version of Westworld.
Like, I mean, go a little bit more intricate and just make it Horizon Zero Dawn land.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. Yes.
where you just hunt the big dog.
Like, yeah, I feel like this also applies to video games. Like so many of these things, like I don't actually care about killing things. I just care about like it's really fun to shoot.
Something and to have something tell me that I hit it. It doesn't actually have to die. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Like.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I would do a Shadow of the Colossus land.
Ooh.
You have like 16 climbing amusements where it would have to be easy since you want a lot of people to come into this. But, you know, you get to stab something when you get to the top. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, that's all I got.
Yeah.
So I really want to do, you know, CrossFit has, you know, workouts of the day. It's, you know, what they do. And, you know, generally like semi-themed, you know, sets of exercises. I really want to do a Shadow of the Colossus workout of the day, have a climbing wall, you know, sets alternating between climbing wall and mechanical bull.
Oh yeah, that would work. Yeah. Well, thank you everybody for writing in. If you would like to participate in these in the future, you can go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for them to go up. Watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you. Thank you, Dennis, for putting this one up.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys want to hear Dottie growl?
Yes,
sure.
Ooh. Oh, I heard it.
Yeah. Sorry, she was biting me. I need to get her out of here with a.
Yeah, I saw the video you posted of her. Yeah, so adorable.
Ooh, watch. You mean to grab a drink real quick?
Yeah. Okay, laser pointer out, and you're gone. she was biting me, so.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about some things that are happening in the world of video games, many of which are exciting to us. Dennis, what is the story that you brought, and does it relate to the multiplayer?
Yeah, this was the inspiration, and this has been in the news for a while, but we're actually getting to the point where Nintendo is opening up a Super Nintendo World theme park.
This looks so good. Cool to me. So oh badass. My god, the photos that are coming out, like the headline photo on the article that you put in the Slack is the Mario Kart carts, and I looked at this and like I've not wanted to go to a public place because fuck that. but like, man, what I would give to drive around one of those carts, and I've seen videos and stuff, and god, it looks so good.
It looks so good. Yeah, and so ignoring the fact that this is the worst possible time to be opening a theme park.
Right.
This looks absolutely
right. In the U.S.
Yeah, how much does Japan have their shit together on coronavirus?
I think everybody's having a rougher time than they were earlier, but nobody is as disastrous as us. So.
Yeah. That aside, this looks phenomenal, and the big feature so far has been the go-kart ride.
Mm-hmm.
And just the theming around it and like everything. This is done, it's a part of Universal Studios Japan
in Osaka.
And I mentioned earlier how Universal Studios like does really crazy cool stuff, and so I can imagine just all the loving attention to detail that went into these rides and this park. It's just got to be really cool. Interesting point on the go-kart or the Mario Kart ride is it's not go-karts. It is an on-rails thing, but apparently you get a pair of AR glasses and there is some kind of like shooting or banana peel throwing element to it. And I can't really square that in my mind. I guess I just have to ride it to understand.
That's a thing that's been a thing at Disney where like they've had like a shooting, like a Buzz Lightyear's laser challenge ride at Disney for a while. Like the ride that is also a game that you can participate in. Like the new wrinkle is the AR glasses.
Yeah, which again, worst possible time to have AR glasses that you're trading with everyone. But a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
To go to Japan for something like this is going to be a tall order.
Yeah.
February 4th is a day before my birthday. And if any independently wealthy, benevolent listeners are out there and just want to, send it my way, I'll put that out into the universe. You can't get what you don't ask for, guys.
I hate to, you have to visualize it. I hate to break this to you. I don't think Japan wants us right now.
I mean, do they ever?
You mean reason could there be that it's a bad idea to go to Japan with a 2 week old child?
So. Right. Gotcha. It'll be fine. But yes, it's opening up with Mario Kart ride, Yoshi's Adventure ride, even just like the set design and stuff. Like there's a big Bowser's Castle set of stairs that I just want to go up and down to spend the entire day.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fit and finish on everything looks amazing. I don't know.
The it's funny that the other headlines have been around like the food and the merchandise, which we just talked about how that's why you go to Star Wars Land.
Right.
Or what do they actually call it? Galaxy's Edge?
Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Star Wars Land communicates it just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would be curious what the Nintendo themed food is, but that wouldn't be the main draw. Main draw would just be existing in the spaces. I want to live in a design, to exist in a design space. Yeah. Let's see here. I've got my story. This one's real quick. I have talked about the haunted PS1 demo disc and kind of the broader like haunted PS1 creative collective, just a group of people who are making lo-fi, 32-bit style horror games. In the past, they had done stuff with like DreadX collaborated there. They had the Haunted demo disc for December here. Starting now, if you go to hauntedps1.itch.io/madvent2020 or just do a search Haunted PS1 Madvent 2020, they're holding an event called the Madvent Calendar, where it's 24 games to play each day until Santa arrives with deer and sleigh, and sleigh is spelled slay. Every day it's going to unlock, this little installer is going to unlock a new short little horror experience for you to play here in December. And I'm kind of bummed out that I didn't know this was coming up, because I would totally have loved to do like a stream a day. I may need to get caught up in order to go along with this, but it's just like a free fun little sampler that is meted out, one per day, and it sounds really cool to me. I'm looking at the page right now, and some of these games look really fun.
Yeah, the web design is very in theme with
love it
the general feel of these games.
So I'm excited about that. I want to dive into it. It is a fantastic idea to show off a bunch of creators' works. So,
yeah.
Let's see. David What's your story? I can't discern what it is based on the link you put in.
I can't either. So this just came across Hacker News. It's apparently a old game that was released in 1997 called Forbes Corporate Warrior.
What?
It's a Doom style first person shooter. However, the intro text of the game explains that what is actually happening is you have a state-of-the-art, you know, VR headset that abstracts, you know, running a business into, I don't know, like the 1997 take on what the internet was. And so as you're running around shooting things, you're actually, I don't know,
selling files.
Yeah, selling things and building things and, I don't know, making profits and stuff like that. And your heads-up display apparently displays your health in terms of, like, earnings, debt, and equity.
Your fiscal health?
Yeah. Yes.
This seems like something that would be made as a joke.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. It's like, I can find nothing about this. Like,
okay,
I don't know. I pulled up the Wikipedia article for it, and it's literally a single paragraph long that just says it's a 3D first-person shooter thinly guised as an investment game.
This has to be so. This is probably going away. The fact that Corporate Warrior was hailed by Crane's New York Business Magazine. What is Crane? That's like a it's a defunct like business. But the fact that it is Doom meets Wharton School of Business, they would not have put in. They would not have called it Wharton School of Business if Trump didn't go there. Forbes Corporate Warrior doesn't have a. Wait a minute. No, it's got a Moby Games. Wait, what? Okay, it's got a Moby Games listing. The lead developer, what else do they work on? They worked on other stuff in the mid-90s. This might be real. I trust Moby Games more than I trust Wikipedia.
So this also looks like it's from the age where just one ridiculously passionate person can put something like this together. And so
yeah, it was released.
Whoever works in the back room of Forbes and is like, hey, can I get some budget for this, you know, this is going to be a game about whatever, and then just makes whatever they want.
I need to, if this is playable, we need to fast track this on Abject Suffering because this looks intolerable.
Also, the produced and directed by is apparently John Mayo Smith, which is the most white person name ever.
That is, that's the person whose Moby credit I was looking at. The page was last edited on the 30th of October of 2018. So if it is a joke, it is at least as old as that.
Wow.
What's on the talk page? Nothing is on the talk page. Nobody has talked about this. I'm wrapped around the axle about Forbes Corporate Warrior, David.
Yeah, that's literally all I have on this.
We can't stop talking about this until we figure out if it's serious or not.
You've cursed me with this knowledge. So.
You see, there was that the Flat Earth Simulator.
No, I didn't see that. What was that?
It's a Flat Earth Simulator that is just like a completely straight-faced game that is so ridiculous it has to be a parody. But the like, you're just waiting for someone to wink or joke, and you can't like suss it out. So.
That's on Steam. Like it's a $5 mm-hmm. game. You can get there. I'm curious about that. So Flat Earth, like it's like a lot of that is people who like are making it a joke about it, but also it has its roots. I didn't realize this until I listened to a podcast about it. Has its roots in like extremely virulent anti-Semitism. So, I didn't realize how problematic the flat earth was, But yeah, it goes back to like,
wait, problematic on that level. It's plenty problematic on plenty of other levels.
Oh, but yeah, yeah, wow. No, it's not, it's completely junk science, but like it is junk science that that some people are very motivated to believe that it is a Jewish run hoax. There's an episode of Behind the Bastards, a podcast I listen to that basically like they just started looking at a book about flat earth, like as a joke. And when they discovered that it was like straight up like Nazi propaganda, it ended up being a lot less funny, actually.
Mm-hmm. I do kind of like the image that, I don't know, I just have this image in my head of like some horrible anti-Semitic person that has like a teacher who's like, oh yeah, the earth is round. And they're like, well, now I can't believe it.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, you got a story?
I got nothing.
Attaboy. How do y'all feel about bunting it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. We really appreciate it. Dennis, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, I wish you the best of luck with what's coming up here over the next week or so.
I know. Even if I am able to jump on next week, it's like having a new kid is that weird stage where it's like you have absolutely nothing going on, mm-hmm. because you're just completely centered around this new life. But you also, you know, are completely centered around this new life. So
you're kind of on call whenever it decides, hey, I need something.
Yeah, yeah, never, yeah. Not on call.
You can just have the other kids raise them. It's fine. That's the, yeah. You know, it'll be okay. That's that's my guarantee. TM, yeah. That's my advice.
Okay, now that you've said it, I'm okay, right. Here. But no, so you know, whether or not I'm on, I will be plus one Furia next
cool.
week.
Cool. Well. We look forward to seeing the photos at the mm-hmm. at the very least of little new baby Furia. For us though, you know, the usual stuff that you can do. We're gonna have announcements about Duckstream here coming up. That'll be a good time. It is hard to believe that this year is almost over. It is all whisked by. So, I have been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
I am Dennis Furia, and you can find me on the socials at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the name if you're on Twitter and not anywhere else. I said that in the most confusing way possible, but I do want to celebrate. Yeah. Deck of Wonders in post-campaign. Like late pledges and stuff has crossed the final stretch goal that I laid out.
Holy cow.
And so yeah, that is incredible. And it means that the like, this is exactly the game I want to make. No compromises. Everything is in it, which is incredibly exciting. And you can get in on it through late pledges. If you just go to any of the socials, you can find the link to the game found page.
Fantastic.
So good times.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
David.
I'm David. I'm here.
Yeah, no, I don't have a sweet segue or paragraph talking about it. I'm just Ben.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. So I've got two. And one of them I prefer more than the other. I've got College Coaster, all one word. And then I also have Roller Coaster Typhoon. I prefer College Coaster, but
College Coaster is pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, you're gonna climb up here, Dottie? Up or down? Because
Cole's being attacked.
If you don't commit, whether up or down, all you're doing is hanging off of the flesh of my leg by your very short claws. yeah. Who else has titles?
She's playing Shadow of the Colossus right now.
Colossus.
Yeah.
I have several. Okay. I don't know if any of them approach College Coaster. I've got Trivia Murder Party Purist.
Okay.
Thank you for reminding me what TMPP meant.
I knew I had to write it out, otherwise I'd forget. I've got Can You Ding a Bell?
Oh,
the
yes.
The most urgent question that
two of us came up with. Yeah.
I've got Keep Cooking and Nobody Explodes in the same vein there.
Okay.
And then I've got Steak Raft Dream. Ben said he was living the steak raft dream.
Okay. Cool, Ben.
I just have TMPP.
Okay. David?
I got nothing.
Okay. Yeah, so how do we want to proceed with this?
I'm happy to go College Coaster.
Is anybody else opposed to College Coaster?
I'm cool with College Coaster.
Okay.
I'm cool with College Coaster.
Cool. Let's try that.
Cool College Coaster.
Yeah. I am going to stop recording.